KPFK Pacifica Radio. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. While New York City is the nation's coronavirus epicenter, not far behind is a region that has received little news attention. The Navajo Nation in Arizona and New Mexico has the third highest infection rate in the U.S. So far, there have been nearly 3,000 infections and more than 70 deaths, including that of 28-year-old Valentina Blackhorse, a prominent figure in the community who had political aspirations. The Navajo Nation is currently suing the federal government over the dispersal of financial relief to tribes. Just as African Americans are hardest hit by the pandemic due to the prevalence of long-term pre-existing health conditions, the Native American community is struggling with the rapid spread of the disease. We turn now to a doctor who has been present in Navajo Nation for several days as part of a medical effort there. Dr. Sriram Shamasundar is Associate Professor of Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. He's the co-founder and faculty director of the HEAL Initiative, a health workforce strengthening fellowship working in Navajo Nation and seven countries around the world. Welcome to the program, Dr. Shamasundar.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So the last time we had spoken to you, it was in about mid-March. You were in the Bay Area where you normally are at the University of San Francisco. You're now in the Navajo Nation, which has been a little bit in the news, but not enough, I think, for having, I believe, the third highest infection rate in the nation. Tell me exactly where you are and how serious the coronavirus has hit that particular tribe.
Yeah, so I am currently in Chinle, Arizona. So when we last spoke, I run a program called the HEAL Initiative, which is a global health program that aims to train and support frontline health professionals to become advocates and really experts taking care of underserved populations. And so even before COVID-19, we had about 49 health professionals that were in Navajo Nation over the last 5 years that we've worked with, and some of them are Native, some of them are not Native. And, you know, we just kept hearing from our partners that there's such a huge need for nurses, and there's such a large amount of emergency medicine nurses, critical care nurses, that's the bottleneck. And so with UCSF, we came on April 22nd to Navajo Nation, 21 of us, 14 nurses, and seven doctors, and we're spread across New Mexico and Arizona. As you know, Navajo Nation is about 27,000 square miles. It's the size of New England. And really, the per capita caseload here is incredibly high. I think Gallup, New Mexico, which is a border town of Navajo Nation, has the second or third most new cases in the last 2 weeks. And then Navajo Nation really is in a surge. So in Chinle, Arizona, where I saw patients all weekend, you know, the volume has increased. The workforce has been running a marathon of trying to take care of these patients. And now we're seeing kind of increased volumes as there's a lockdown across Navajo Nation and Gallup, New Mexico.
Were there adequate measures put into place early on in the Navajo Nation?
Yeah, I think one of the real narratives of Navajo Nation is incredible local and regional leadership. As you know, that Navajo Nation is a sovereign state, so it has its own government. And we've actually met with the president over here, President Nez, and he's really been on the forefront, his office, of leading amount of lockdowns and physical distancing and really wearing a mask and really trying to navigate this with his population. So I think the New Mexico leadership, the governor has done an incredible job. I really think what you're seeing in Navajo Nation is laying bare a lot of the systemic racism that exists in the United States, where, you know, for example, in Michigan, Black folks make up 14% of the population, but are 40% of the deaths. And in Chicago, they're only 30% of the population and make up 56% of the deaths. And, you know, New Mexico Native Americans are only 11% of the population, but are a third of the COVID cases. And so we know that the Indian Health Service is underfunded. It's about a third of the funding per capita as the VA or Medicare. We know that generally before COVID, Native health has been not, has been subject to broken treaties and a lack of deep investment. So there's really a lack of infrastructure. And then, of course, you do have this expansive definition of family with uncles and aunties and grandparents all living in close proximity. And so, you know, in Chinle, Arizona, where I was working last week, there was four generations of family members that were, you know, the great-grandmother, the grandmother, the daughter, the mother, all of them really hospitalized. And so you're seeing these clusters in families that with the population that's poor, that has chronic disease and has difficulty sheltering in place because they live with 8 or 10 people. And so it's no surprise, like vulnerable populations and people of color across the country, that you're seeing a surge here.
So it sounds like what has been seen, particularly in the African American community, with very, very higher than, you know, very, very high rates of COVID deaths disproportionate to the population because of those pre-existing conditions that make people vulnerable, like diabetes, heart disease, hypertension. You're seeing some of those same things in Indian country as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's both higher rates of diabetes, there's higher rates of obesity, there's food insecurity. I think you have a lot of families and communities that have to go out and secure large amounts of groceries and make their way into town. So you have lines over there, and then you have people coming back into their communities where clearly they have several people in the family. So I think you're seeing both, the beauty of Navajo Nation and the beauty of this sacred land and sacred people is that there's this deep sense of community and everybody is connected, and that makes them more susceptible to the coronavirus.
What is the status of testing, both of actual COVID testing and even of, being able to track patients who might have had it?
Navajo Nation, speaking of the incredible regional leadership and local leadership, they are testing at higher rates per capita than almost anywhere in the country. So you have really a lot of leadership, and they're doing both the PCR test, the Abbott test. They're doing different types of tests here, and they're starting to test asymptomatic individuals and all folks that come into the hospital. So, obviously, like the rest of the country, really the amount of testing needs to scale up, because that's the only way you can test, and then you can isolate folks that are positive. And so, for example, where we work in Gallup, New Mexico, there's 125 unsheltered patients that the local government, as well as the Navajo government, as well as the local providers, have really brought on four hotels to shelter these unhoused folks to protect them. We were providing medical care at those motels, and then it also protects the community. And so they're testing at a really high rate. I think one of the challenges is contact tracing that is getting up and going, as we know, across the country. And, it's a public health fundamental. And so it's also getting up and going. It's been going in Navajo Nation, and they're starting, more and more robust efforts to contact trace. Because as you can imagine, as people spread out across Navajo Nation and are potentially infected, the risk of infecting others and who they come in contact with, and tracing them and being able to follow them, is really the crux of how we prevent this pandemic from even surging more.
What about federal government assistance? In the last coronavirus relief bill, there was relief for hospitals that were tackling patients in that bill. Did Navajo Nation, did other tribal governments get any of that money for their hospitals?
So President Nez has been talking about this quite a bit. And, you know, obviously at the policy level, since I'm taking care of clinical patients, my insight is through discussions with leadership here. And really, the states got direct aid, and I think there's a delay. And President Nez has been very vocal on the level of the CARES Act causing delays. First of all, it needs to be split across 500 plus tribes around the country, the money that's allocated, and then, you know, it's going through a delay and not going directly to tribes. And so I think you're seeing definitely these delays, like in Chinle, Arizona, where we're working, our HEAL fellows and others have taken over the cafeteria and are working to sew PPE. And, you know, even our solidarity effort with Navajo Nation, I think there's incredible amounts of ingenuity that is occurring here, but the federal response has been very slow, and both the money and the support has been slow, and the PPE. So you're seeing really folks on the local level take it in their own hands and really doing their best to serve their community.
So when we compare the impact of the virus and the response to it of Navajo Nation compared to the rest of the country, how would you give an overall assessment? Because we have this patchwork state-by-state response in the United States. It sounds like you're saying the leadership of the Navajo Nation has been very proactive and science-based. But is it the lack of resources and or the prevalence of pre-existing conditions that is the reason why there is such a high rate of infection, as well as, you know, the way in which the community is structured, referring to what you were saying about families, you know, generations living together?
Yeah, I think all of those are true. And, you know, I think it is a rural place. And so it's obviously different than New York or New Jersey or some of the other urban metropolises that you're seeing the outbreaks in. And, you know, I really think it's we've gutted our public health system over the last 40 years. And so a systemic response of getting PPE on the ground, getting health workforce on the ground. We know that there's, you know, even before COVID-19, there's a 30% health workforce vacancy in Navajo Nation. And so you have all these systemic structural racism as well as structural violence that exists on the reservation, and, you know, short workforce, underfunded health system, and then, you know, a population where we know a third of the population doesn't have running water, 40% don't have electricity. I mean, this is in the United States, where before I started working in Navajo Nation, I wasn't even aware of a lot of these statistics. And so I think Native American history is American history, and all of us who are, you know, Americans or citizens of the United States really need to understand this history and why this outbreak is really taking off in Navajo Nation. And it's a whole variety of historical injustice, as well as, you know, chronic poverty, obesity, you know, and underfunding of a health system.
Tell me a little bit about some of the patients that you've seen and dealt with. We had one particular person who made it in the news was a well-known prominent figure named Valentina Blackhorse. She was a pageant winner. She had political aspirations, and she was only 28. And she, I understand, died a day after her test result came back positive.
Yeah, I think, you know, here we've been seeing a range of ages. It hasn't been only elderly folks. And so I think as we think about the country opening up in different parts of the country, governors making this decision, I think, you know, Navajo Nation with, I've seen 32-year-olds that were about to be intubated last week. I've seen several people in their 40s and 50s, and of course, more elderly people, but it's really a range. as young as 32 and clusters. And, you know, it is a place where, with chronic poverty, people have to go to work. People often don't have the choices of sheltering in place. And so you're starting to see this level of population that is not just one age range. And so I saw two sisters over the weekend that were both hospitalized. And in the motel population, I think with the unsheltered folks, these are folks that kind of live around Gallup and the community knows them quite well. And so we're partnering with an organization that that helps them with their toiletries, they're, you know, getting them clothes, getting them all kinds of resources, and we're really watching their, taking care of their medical care. And, you know, to be in a motel 24 hours a day, there's a lot of anxiety, there's a lot of isolation, there's a lot of fear of infecting other people. I think you're seeing people scared of either infecting themselves, getting infected themselves, or infecting their family members. And so there's a lot of question of like, okay, once I leave this motel, even if I'm now been treated for COVID and I'm no longer infectious, how can I make sure I don't infect my, you know, all my loved ones? And so you see that anxiety here too.
What do you want for the Navajo Nation when this crisis starts to ease? I mean, it's hard to say going back to normal, because a lot of people are realizing we may never be able to go back to normal. We may have to create a new normal. But in terms of addressing the pre-existing issues, those long-term inequities that have given rise to very high levels of disease that make people vulnerable to COVID-19, what do you as a physician want to see for the Navajo Nation going forward in terms of long-term healthcare?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really think we need to make our first citizens first, because what you saw amongst the early days of testing in COVID-19 is symbolic of what a broken U.S. health system has entrenched, because, you know, there was a meme on Instagram, right, where they were saying the best way to get tested is to sneeze in the face of a rich person. And obviously that is a joke, but at the same time, you had like asymptomatic wealthy folks getting tested, where it was corrupt, right? There's no other way to say it, is that you couldn't get tested in certain parts of the country if you were symptomatic, and in other parts, if you're wealthy and asymptomatic, you could get tested. And so how do we make the first citizens of our country first, the most vulnerable? I think a health system has to function to take care of its most vulnerable. And so as we think about successful therapies, as we think about possible vaccination, how does it become absolutely required that these populations get access to those medications, those vaccinations first and not last, which has been the history of the United States? And so, you know, this is an opportunity to flip that script, flip that history, and really anchor in, you know, if we are committed to Native populations, if we're committed to vulnerable populations as a health system, that when we have therapies, when we have vaccinations, it can't be that it trickles down like it always does to these vulnerable populations. They have to be put first.
Well, Dr. Shyamasundar, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time. Where can people find out more about the HEAL Initiative?
Sure. So we're at www.healinitiative.org. And I'm on Twitter at Srijeeva, Srijeeva. And HEAL Initiative is also at HEAL Initiative on Twitter as well.
And we'll post links to those from our website. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Dr. Sriram Shamasundar, Associate Professor of Medicine at UC San Francisco, co-founder and faculty director of the HEAL Initiative, speaking to us from the Navajo Nation. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.